You are listening to episode number 122 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast.
Hell yeah!
Welcome to episode number 122 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Joining me tonight from the city of Boston, who's currently not getting hit by, well, you're getting hit by the hurricane, Sandy, right?
Yeah. We're not getting it too bad, though. We're still alive down here.
But unfortunately tonight,
oh, Ben.
Yes.
Where the hell are Taser and Arnold, dude? I'm so scared.
I don't know where they're at. Do you know where they're at?
Oh wait, yeah, I forgot. They were they're crotch deep over in Sandy right now. It's Hurricane Sandy, you know, not actual. Well, they might be. I don't know.
Taser is. Anyway,
yeah.
This is the first time ever we've done this. It's gonna be just me and Brian tonight, a two man duo tonight.
Two man show, baby.
Arnold doesn't have any power from what we've understand, and Taser, his power keeps his connection at least keeps cutting in and out. So. When you listen to this, key, I'm pretty sure they're fine, but, you know, they'll be...
Yeah, Taser has decided to recuse himself from the show tonight, and Arnold's just kind of hunkering down under the coffee table with a strong, masculine cabana boy that he snagged before the hurricane hit. Yes. So, we're on our own tonight.
Yes, I can't even believe how big of a storm it is. I'm like, Jesus.
It's already been downgraded from a hurricane over here. Now it's a quote-unquote post-tropical cyclone, which
That's still fucking vicious.
Yeah, I know, but the point is, it's being downgraded, so, you know.
All right, I mean, I didn't think if you lived in New York City, you'd have to worry about hurricanes, but I guess you do, because you're right.
Well, yeah, normally the top of your list are Skrull invasions, and terrorist attacks, and, you know, biological terrorism attacks, and, you know, just all that good stuff.
Yep. Anyways, so, we are the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. We are a weekly Marvel podcast dedicated to all things Marvel, whether it's comics, movies, TV, video games,
but not last week, Ben. Not last week.
It's not my fault you didn't show.
it's not my fault,
Mr. I gotta catch some homework. So anyways, we're going to open off right off. Last Tuesday saw the official first trailer release of Iron Man 3, the next
Woo!
Movie coming out of Marvel Studios. The first movie in the Phase 2 set of plans from Marvel, which also includes Guardians of the Galaxy, Avengers
2, Thor 2,
and Avengers 2, of course.
Yeah.
No Hulk
and,
movie, though.
Ant-Man thrown in there somewhere,
Ant-Man,
I guess.
Fuck that movie. I don't I don't. Doctor Strange or Black Panther, but no, you give me fucking Ant-Man. You kidding me with this? Anyways, so needless to say, we all saw it, or at least I'm so used to there being more than two of us, but Brian and I saw it, and now, if y'all remember on episode number 98 or something, I gave a very horrendous rant, the fact that Mandarin was not Chinese and all this and all that.
Mm-hmm.
While I'm not going to eat my words entirely...
We'll get you the bib ready, though. We'll get you, like, the fork and knife ready to go.
I will say this. Out of the one thing that really stuck out of my mind that had me go... Was Sir Ben Kingsley speaking as the Mandarin. That sort of, ladies, people, sheep, and just
oh
the way
God,
he
right?
the way he pronounced, he enunciated, the way he talked, the way he said the dialogue, I guess, as I say it in many
ways. His manner of speaking was really...
It sounded like the Mandarin should sound. That calm, cool, collected, but yet he's an evil, sadistic son of a bitch, and he has a vicious plan for you.
Exactly.
I mean, he just... I consider myself... some call me a terrorist. I consider myself a teacher. That really had me... And then, of course, we see a little bit of him sort of... Not in the Mandarin lookalike, but sort of like we saw the rings, but they weren't doing anything. So who knows if the rings are actually going to be for show or if they're actually going to, you know, do something.
Maybe they'll be like runes from Thor's world or some shit like that. Who knows?
Everything ties into Thor's world. Everything ties there.
everyone loves Asgard.
So, but we also get looks of the Iron Patriot, which I think the rumors is that it's just War Machine, but with a different paint job, right?
Yeah, I think the government like repainted Rhodey once he came in from that whole Justin Hammer debacle. So
it's just a big ass Easter egg for the fans. Like that's Iron Patriot.
It's also just a giant middle finger to every other nation inside the Marvel Universe at this point.
Yeah, but it's War Machine for all right now.
Yeah,
and we got Guy Pearce. Do we know who Guy Pearce is going to be? Like who's
if he's from the Extremis storyline, he's the one who sells the Extremis armor to the terrorists, I believe. But his name escapes me at the moment. I apologize.
Okay, if you want to look up who he is,
I'm going to look that up right now. Yeah. So you know.
So we got, and I think we also saw in 1 second Maya Hansen, who is the creator of the, at least in the comics, the Extremis genetic stuff.
That comes from Tony's skin, basically.
Yeah. We also saw it looks like Tony Stark going under for that procedure. So we saw a little bit of that.
Aldrich Killian is his name, the character's name.
All right, I don't remember if that was the name of the comic, but either way...
Looks to be his name according to the list of Marvel characters, minor characters anyway.
It's been
a while since I
read Extremis. That storyline was done by Warren Ellis and Adi Granov.
Yeah, and it says here, within the context of the stories, Killian is a scientist who developed the Extremis virus alongside Maya Hansen.
Yeah, I think he committed suicide, because he let
because the guilt gets to him, apparently.
Yeah.
Spoilers!
Funny enough, that whole place where they took place in Austin, Texas. Yeah, I'm not serious. Like, if you read the captions, like, I think it's like called Future Farms or something like that, or some whatever the company, it says caption Austin, Texas, like, and... When I read that for
Could
the first time...
Could that tied in somehow to World's Most Wanted? Psst, Ben, that's foreshadowing.
Who knows? But also, the other part we got in the trailer is, I think a lot of people are making this comparison, the Dark Knight version of Tony Stark and the fact that it looks like this Iron Man is going to be... Looks like things are not going to go good for Tony Stark this time.
It looks like Tony gets his ass kicked once or twice.
You know, we see we hear the monologue of Tony Stark, basically royally being mindfucked because of the situation happened in Avengers. And Brian and I were talking about this offline, but if you look at him, while Tony Stark has been through a lot of stuff, it's still relatively.
Yeah, Taser
human.
Made the point of pointing out that Tony has already been through a lot of shit. He was held captive by terrorists in the desert, and he had a longtime family friend and father figure turn on him, and he had his heart, you know, take a beating and then is replaced and stuff. So all this stuff has kind of just swirled around Tony, but he's always been managing to kind of, like, hold it back or hold it down in a sense, I guess we should say. And now what this does, basically, is this takes what happened to Tony in New York, because as Ben and I were saying, he's really one of the most human characters, I believe, in the current Avengers lineup,
pretty much.
I'm not mistaken. So essentially what you're getting here is Tony Stark, you know, he's a guy who pretty much believes in what he can do. He believes in the armor, he believes in science, he believes in finding solutions to problems that he can control and create and stuff. And so what we kind of see happen in Avengers is, if you haven't seen it already, well, fuck you, first of all. Second of all, what happens is there's a big alien invasion. Tony takes part in the whole rescue of New York. And at one point, he pretty much almost – in fact, I think he does die for a few minutes, if I'm not mistaken. But he ends up dying and is resuscitated to life, and he kind of takes it all in stride with his typical RDJ, you know, charm and swagger and all of that, because, you know, no other guy could play him. But it just comes out as all this stuff is finally piling up on top of Tony, and he's finally just kind of starting to crack a little bit.
Yep. Which I think, like, that to me says they're like, it feels like a continuation of the Avengers, but not overwhelmed by it. Of course, you know, he should feel like what, everything has kind of changed. You know, so
I, definitely, because this is on top of everything else, this is opening themselves up to a much larger world than I believe they were previously aware of, especially with Thor and now the Skrull come, or Chitauri, I guess they're called, or whatever. You know, it's all finally just kind of expanding, and everyone, and I'd probably crack under the stress too of realizing there's so much more out there than just what I thought I had in my fingertips.
Yeah, it's bigger than your mind can comprehend. And then you meet characters who are supposedly gods, like Thor and Loki. It's just, and of course the Hulk. Even though he's trying to provoke him, I think, you know, he's still astonished by it. And also we got a little hint of that he already has it. He's not already has it, but like the glove flying towards him. It looks like. I didn't hate the new armor as I thought I would. I thought it looked fine in motion. I didn't necessarily hate the paint job. It was going too fast for me to notice it, so I didn't hate it.
No, yeah, I'm pretty sure just like all the past armors and stuff, like every armor that's been, you know, showing up since then, and you know, it this storyline is definitely pointing towards a bit of extra miss with some of, you know, some armor wars. I think is a little bit thrown in there, maybe just a little bit with certain elements. And, you know, all this other stuff being collected into one giant third story, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, and of course, the epic of his house being destroyed, which I can only assume was by the Mandarin's forces.
Which really does show you kind of just how this works, because you'd figure a guy like Tony Stark would have, like, precautions set up for this kind of shit, you know?
We don't know the situations and why. And I have a feeling something bad's going to happen to Pepper. Like, I don't...
Yeah, she doesn't look too happy in that trailer. She has some moments where she's just kind of, you know... Although I will point out that I am... Tony Stark does make the point of saying he wants to protect the one thing he can't live without, and that's Pepper. And I think that really does say much for his character growth and how they're examining his human element, I guess, in the you know, in this movie.
Yeah. Which, needless to say, so as much as I'm still trepidatious on Ben Kingsley's The Mandarin, because we haven't seen actual visual performances, but based on that line of dialogue he gave, I got a little boner. Little boner. Weirdest boner ever. But
Ben Kingsley definitely has that chilling sort of speech coming out. You know, he sounds like he already knows what's going to happen, and he's just delivering. You know, it almost strikes me as, excuse me for mentioning the distinguished competition, but almost like Ozymandias in Watchmen, where he's giving the speech, he's like, I did it 35 minutes ago. It kind of strikes me as almost that, where he already knows it's in motion, it's happening. He's just, you know, just kind of telling you, letting you know.
Exactly. So, I mean, I don't know if he's going to be able to do any of the attack. Like, that's the one thing that worries me. It's like, is he actually going to visually be able to fight Iron Man? You know, that's the one thing that worries me a little bit. So let's see. Let's get another trailer. I mean, we got a long way till April, late April, first weekend of May, basically, before the movie comes out. But
that's true. And you know, us here, we'll definitely keep all of our listeners updated on all the new footage we get and all the new plot points to come out. So, you know. Be here, I guess.
Yeah, needless to say, Iron Man 3 just quickly shot out. Like, oh, okay, this is...
Well, we were going to go see it anyway, because RDJ is Iron Man, and, you know.
You're right, but now I have higher hopes for the movie a lot more, considering it's not Jon Favreau anymore, and it's the Mandarin's not Chinese and all those other things.
Well, so. We get Shane Black directing this time around, who himself has directed RDJ very, very well in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yes. So, we talked about Iron Man.
Yeah, I just gave Wes like a mini boner. He's like somewhere right now. He's like, what was that?
Yeah. So, enough of that. We're all excited for Iron Man 3. At least us two here are excited for Iron Man 3. But we got some negative news from terms of directorial standpoint.
Oh, no.
Why don't you tell us some info about that?
Okay, folks. Many of you may remember this tiny, you know, little known indie flick that came out, I think it was last year, called X-Men First Class. Now, this little movie, in case you didn't see it, was essentially a retelling quasi-origin story of the X-Men franchise over at Fox, which essentially focused on the relationship between Charles Xavier and Eric Lenscher, a.k.a. Professor X and Magneto, and the formation of the original X-Men team, with some liberties taken, obviously. Now, the person who directed the first film was Matthew Vaughn, who admittedly did a very, very well job, because the characters of Kevin Bacon, Sebastian Shaw, and Michael Fassbender as Magneto were very well done. And the movie itself was quite good for what people expected from it anyway. And what we get now, though, sadly, is we find that Matthew Vaughn has officially dropped out of directing the sequel, X-Men First Class, Days of Futures Past. Wow, that is a mouthful of a title. That's crazy. I really hope they find some way to shorten that down. But anyway, moving away from that, yes, Matthew Vaughn has officially dropped out of directing the movie. And reportedly, at the top of the shortlist to replace him is none other than X-Men film directing royalty Bryan Singer, who himself directed the very first X-Men and X2 movies for Fox, but dropped out of directing the third one in favor of taking Superman Returns. Boo, it sucked. Okay. So yeah, that's essentially where we're at right now with the X-Men First Class franchise.
So I would also, this isn't the first time Matthew Vaughn has dropped out of an X-Men movie.
Really?
Yes, he actually, before Brett Ratner, he was going to be the guy to direct X3. But he felt too much pressure, so he dropped out and they got Brett Ratner. So let's hope they don't go to Brett Ratner again. The thing is with this, like, because this is apparently the first time that Vaughn has done this. Apparently he wasn't even going to do Kick-Ass. He dropped out of Kick-Ass for a while, and then he was going to come back. And then he came back.
Wow, so he's just like a chronic guy of just dropping out of things.
Somebody on Twitter or on another website I saw called him the JMS of filmmakers, starting a project with leaving. Like, the thing is, like, you know, he – X-Men First Class is a damn good movie. And, you know, he plays a large part of it as a director. I don't understand him leaving the project. Like, is it the hesitation to not do – or – at least leaving a project when it's already underway, you know? I don't understand it. Now, if Bryan Singer comes back, now, while I like both X-Men and X2...
Definitely. They're quality movies in and of their own right.
I think going from Bryan, from Vaughn to Singer is totally different. They're both different style directors. They want to do different things. Singer's definitely not going to want to do what Vaughn does. Although Singer did have a lot of hand in what... X-Men First Class was, so it's not, you know, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, like, in what way did he have a hand in it?
I think he did a lot of the story stuff. He's credited a lot. Like, he should get more credit than he deserved, than he got. I mean,
well, then again,
he's kind of the reason the first two X-Men movies were really good, and why a lot of people went to go see X3, despite that he wasn't in the director's seat this time.
I thought, like, there'd be goodwill or stuff, but. You know, it really is just a definite blow to the franchise, just frankly, because, you know, he made the movie really good, because I remember, even on this show, back before the movie came out, we were all bashing on this film, ready to tear it to pieces, and then we all went inside, and we were all watching, and we were like, holy shit, this is actually a really good movie. It isn't constrained by the past movies or stuff. And it doesn't completely stand on its own. It's kind of like a unique blending of the two. And I think Vaughn pulled that off really well. And losing him now is just going to be really, really difficult.
They need to get somebody fast. I mean, I think they start shooting next year. I mean, the release date's for 2014.
Yeah, they had to schedule, like, around Jennifer Lawrence and her Hunger Games bullshit. But
well, that's going to make her more money.
Shut up, Ben. We're a Marvel podcast. Anyway, this is definitely a huge, huge downer for any of the fans of the First Class, the first movie. And honestly, as far as being a fan of the X-Men movies goes, I do not want Bryan Singer directing this next movie. I really, really don't. Just for me, it's a huge step backwards in terms of storytelling and, like you said, Ben, tone. It's just, it really seems like they're reaching to, like, okay, they're in panic mode. Bryan Singer, we know this guy. We know him. He's comfortable. Let's get him.
I mean, like, they don't have a lot of choices. Vaughn had, well, he hasn't royally fucked him over. He kind of put him in a spot like, fuck, we got to do something now.
Yeah, yeah.
To me screams unprofessional. Like, why would you take the job? Like, what happened?
It does make me question, like, because when you list off how many film projects he's, like, reportedly dropped out of and then come back to, it's like, is he, like, just trying to stir up drama or something? Or is he just doing this for a reason? Like, why would he drop out of so many projects like this? But despite all that, and I'm really trying to look at this from just, you know, a fan's perspective, despite him dropping out of the project, whatever may be the reasons – you know, he was a really, really good director for the first film, and I think this is going to hurt it a little bit when they go back to the second one. And that says a lot, considering we don't even know who this new director is going to be yet, because, you know, normally we would wait and we would judge, like, okay, compared to this guy and that guy, who do you think, how it's going to play out and stuff. So for us to already be calling it as kind of a negative thing, you know, that really, really says something about what we're looking at here in terms of directorial skill, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it, although X-Men First Class, Days of Futures Past does take a little bit of a hit now that Vaughn's not going to be behind it. But Singer isn't a bad choice. It's not the ideal choice coming after Vaughn, but he's not a bad director. I think with Superman Returns, his only problem...
No, I mean, I'm not trying to say Singer is bad at directing. He's actually, like I said, the first two X-Men movies were very, very good. And I do like some of his other projects as well. But the thing is, you shouldn't be reverting to what you've done before. You should be looking to move forward.
But considering the amount of time, they don't really have a lot of choices.
Yeah, I guess, but still, you don't know what something like this is gonna, like this emergency recast is gonna do to the film. You don't know how it's gonna play out, and so, you know, him not having been on board yet and already stirring up this kind of just, oh, why is he coming back? It's really just kind of disheartening, because, you know, people really like this film. We see potential in it, and so to finally have this thing just kind of like, hey, meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
It kind of just
hurts me a little bit. But I really do hope that they find a new director who's equally as talented and creative as Vaughn. Not necessarily Bryan Singer, although I wouldn't be completely heartbroken, but I would be disappointed in Fox and, you know, for letting this happen.
So. I don't blame him if they go to Singer. He's the safe bet. They've worked with him before. It's such short notice.
Yeah. Okay, I think that's enough moping about the X-Men franchise.
All right, so let's move on to our only bit of comic news this time, where, as we all know, apparently we are only...
Hold on.
Yes.
Spoilers.
Spoilers, yes. Skip about 10, 15 minutes ahead, because we'll be talking about the Superior Spider-Man and the rumors of who it's going to be. So if you don't want to know who it's potentially going to be...
You know what you can do? We can time how long we talk about it, and you can skip back and edit it in. Just be like a preface, like, hey, skip to this point.
Yes. So look at the note. Look at the show notes. I will put... there will actually be it for the first time ever again. Time... So look there, skip ahead, and we'll go from there. So anyways... So we basically Dan Slott tweeted that to artist Ryan Stegman, who will be joining him as the new
creative team
for Superior Spider-Man. All that's technically not new, but whatever. Something is going to happen in issue 700, and we've been told that the Spider-Man in Superior Spider-Man number 1 is not Peter Parker, sort of like Miles Morales. In fact, somebody else, and of course we've seen the first two covers of Spider-Man, and the second one is Spider-Man kissing Mary Jane, and a very shocked Mary Jane. So, who is it? Well, again, spoilers. Dan Slott has tweeted something to artist Ryan Stegman about a character whose name is Miguel, does something with his eyes. Now, Dan Slott quickly deleted this tweet. Rich Johnson.
They think it was like an accident, like it was supposed to be private.
Yes.
But.
Dan Slott then deleted that tweet. Rich Johnson of Bleeding Cool posted it, but blanked out. But there are places where you can find out who it is, the name. Now, I'm going to go ahead and say it. The Miguel that we're referencing to, if you don't remember who recognize that name, we can only assume, we have no confirmation to this, that they're referencing to Spider-Man 2099. I can't remember.
Miguel O'Hara.
Miguel O'Hara from Spider-Man 2099. There's going to be a new character altogether, and he's going to have similarities to Miguel O'Hara, or...
Highly unlikely, or but not at all impossible.
Or considering Dan Slott's crazy Silver Age antics, it's going to be Miguel O'Hara himself coming to the past... to be Spider-Man for whatever reason.
Yeah, we're not given a lot of, like, preface as to why there's a different Spider-Man running around.
Yeah, we know it's a different Spider-Man, and, you know, so... But the thing
what
is...
What we don't know is just why it's a different Spider-Man.
Or who it is, and we don't know why. We'll find out, apparently, in issue 700. So, the thing with this is, Now, Miguel O'Hara, Spider-Man 29 is great. He's a fantastic character.
I have personally never read Spider-Man 2099.
I love it. It's a fantastic take on Spider-Man.
I'll have to pick it up at some point. But yeah,
you can find it for me. You can find like the single issues cheap at like any like back issue.
Oh yeah, I'm sure I can. If I go to my LCS, I'll be like, hey, hook me up. But it's weird for me because it might as well be an entirely new Spider-Man because I've never read any of this stuff with him in it, and I've never actually played Shattered Dimensions, which featured Miguel O'Hara in the game. So to me, it's like it might as well be an entirely new Spider-Man.
Yeah, the thing is to me is like, and of course, there's also speculation that they've been rumored, like people have acted at cons when Spider-Man 29 coming back. They said he will be coming back. So well, my thing is, I don't understand it. You know, why not just give him his own title? I'm all for change, but to me, this seems kind of wrong. Like, why not just create a literal brand new character to be replace Spider-Man, but instead of drawing something that you've done, that's, you know, leave Spider-Man 29 where he's at. Because eventually, he's going to have to go back. He can't stay here forever, as the rules of time travel go. So, I don't know. If these rumors are true, I don't want to deal with it. It just further confirmation that I don't want to have anything to do with the Dan Slott written Spider-Man issue. And he's my favorite character. I don't want to have anything to do with it. I don't have anything more to say on this.
Right, well, I don't have much more to add. Just because you know me, I am not the biggest Spider-Man fan, you know. I'm kind of like, I could take him or leave him. The story's right, sure. But I get Spider-Man for the most part, so I don't need to be running around collecting all these issues. As far as getting Miguel O'Hara involved is concerned, it doesn't really strike me as being something that's necessary nor entirely easily explainable. You know, this would be like taking Batman Beyond Terry McGinnis and making him be Batman in the present day. Like, why would you do something like that? What would be the point behind it? So, you know, it just really kind of like makes me scratch my head, like, why are they bringing a guy from the future to be Spider-Man? And I know, it's probably part of the story or whatever, and it's necessary to keep it a secret, but... You know, there's some amount of explanation that is needed here, because, like I said, I'm not the biggest fan of Spider-Man. I'm not the biggest historian on his, like, you know, continuity or franchise or whatever. But bringing back a character from 2099 to be Spider-Man in the present just... It really does just elude me as to why we would need that done. I don't get it, but maybe I'm just short-sighted, maybe Dan Slott knows what he's doing. But... For me right now, I'm just kind of like left shrugging my shoulders like, oh, okay, why?
All answers point to 700, man. Something's going to happen.
And it'll be a complete letdown.
Who knows, man? I don't want to read a Spider-Man issue written by Dan Slott anymore. I haven't done it for the past several months, and it feels great. But I don't want anything to do with the storyline. Wake me up when Dan Slott leaves the book, and then I'll cheer. So do we have anything more to say on this?
About Spider-Man, Miguel O'Hara? No, I have nothing more to say about this. It's fairly straightforward and also not exactly, you know.
Yes.
Pertinent.
All right. And welcome back all the people who skipped ahead, if you were listening. So since nobody's here, basically we're going to talk about every single Marvel book that we read. Luckily it's only six. So let's go ahead and kick it off. Both of us want to talk about Avengers number 32.
Our unofficial book of the week.
Unofficial book of the week, yeah, basically, yeah. So this is the third to last issue of Bendis's run on the Avengers.
Second issue of End Times.
Of End Times. Well, this is wrapping up his run, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically, in the first couple of issues, last issue, they had received a call from Interspace that an Avenger was there. And they've received the call. They call Hank Pym, and they think they know who it is. And we get two artists, Mike Mayhew, who does the stuff with the real world stuff, and then, of course, Brandon Peterson, who does the interior for the Interspace stuff. And they think and they believe that it's Janet Van Dyne, a.k.a. the Wasp, who supposedly had died at the end of Secret Invasion. They go to the same spot where she exploded or whatever. I can't exactly remember what happened. It's been a while since I've seen Secret Invasion. So they decide for Wonder Man eventually shows up and decides, like, I can help. But they're like, no, go away. He's like, aw. So they send Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, and of course Hank Pym, because it's his ex-wife, to go into the inner space, and they're trying to find her, and they do find her, and she basically makes out with everybody in the Avengers. She kisses Thor, like, really hard, like, you know.
She even kisses the helmet of Iron Man, thus stealing Pepper Potts' move. Nice one, Janet.
So, basically, Janet Van Dyne, the Wasp, is back, and she gets to go home. But before they can do that, last great page featuring this awesome badass centaur dude called Lord Gozar, and they have to go through him to get out. Needless to say, I've expressed myself that I am a huge fan of the Wasp, Janet Van Dyne. She's one of my favorite characters. She's one of my favorite Avengers. I was so happy that he brought her back and that she, you know, she's not dead anymore, or she never was dead, but whatever. I really like Brandon Peterson's art. I remember first reading him on the Ultimate Galactus book all those years ago, and his art, while it's sort of, it's still the same style, was still stiff as hell. This stuff feels more organic. It doesn't feel as stiff. It looks better. It still has that same look, but it flows better for some reason. I don't know why. And I wish Mike Mayhew had the opportunity to draw more all of the book, because I liked his take on the event. I like his take on the stuff on the Avengers. So I really like this issue a lot. What did you think of the issue, Brian?
I thought it was pretty decent. I am interested as to what the hell is going on, especially with the whole Cylon Centaur going on the final page. I really don't know what's up with that. But I will raise this issue because Taylor spoke of it before he departed. That the artist, Mayhew, he really didn't make Janet Van Dyne look.
That was Peterson, like, who drew.
Okay, Peterson then. I apologize, Mr. Mayhew. But Peterson, he didn't make Janet look like Janet. He made her look like Black Widow, you know, red hair, blue eyes going on. Taser himself actually thought it was Black Widow for a second, but, you know, the art itself isn't half bad, but it's just that one point that kind of confuses the reader. One thing I also liked was the inclusion of Wonder Man continually being a presence, because back when they first had him up in the New Avengers thing where he took out all the Avengers and stuff, I was concerned they were just going to sweep him under the rug and stuff, which they kind of did for a little while, but then they brought him back, and it's really nice to – I like this Wonder Man. He's confused and complex, and I'll keep my eye on him, but yeah, he kind of comes back and he volunteers to go in their places, be like, if it's dangerous, maybe it's what he's supposed to do. And maybe it's his way to redemption, because he is trying to earn his way back. And so that point kind of interested me real quick. As far as whole Janet Van Dyne being back and pissed off somebody, I'm not surprised, because Janet kind of pissed me off a little bit as a character back when she was in the comic books. She always seemed a bit too sure of herself, and maybe just me personally, but I found her kind of annoying. But yay, Janet's back. Hooray. Though apparently she never died, I guess.
Well, I mean, we saw her. It's like that purple stuff happened, and it's not really clear. I mean, she technically, her body wasn't there. So, I mean, if you don't read the story, but you only read Secret Invasion, technically she's dead. You know, so I don't know.
Right.
I guess it really just shrunk her. Maybe we'll get a better, because she says, I don't have time to explain it now, so maybe we'll get either a no explanation next issue or a better explanation next issue, one or the other.
Yeah. Like I said, it's not a bad story. You know, it's your run of the mill classic Avengers story written by Brian Michael Bendis. You know, it's quality stuff. So I wasn't at all angry at the issue. I'm just, you know, I'm kind of just a few things kind of threw me here or there. Some things actually surprised me and excited me. But overall, it wasn't a bad issue by any stretch of the imagination. I just want to see what happens next and a little bit more of an explanation as to what the hell is going on. So.
All right.
I guess rating on the issue. What did you think of the
I
first part of the rating?
I gave it a 4. I thought it was pretty good. I really enjoyed it, namely because of seeing Janet back. I love Janet.
Yeah, that's cool. I personally give it a 3 out of 5, just because, you know, like I said, there were a few things kind of irked me, but overall it wasn't a bad issue. But it wasn't anything standout spectacular either. So.
All right. Well.
I'm sorry. Hold on. I really don't mean to interrupt you again.
No,
but
go for it.
As we mentioned before, Janet's death was really downplayed. You know, there was a whole big build-up for, like, a bunch of other people, and then they don't even give a mention of Janet coming back at all, which either makes me think Marvel didn't care, or maybe she's not going to be sticking around for very long. So, I guess we'll see. But yeah, that's my final piece on that.
All right, well, the next issue I want to talk about is Punisher Warzone, which is the continuation... Well... pseudo-continuation of Gregor's Run of the Punisher, which technically that story wrapped up. This is basically, as I explained in the last couple of issues of Punisher, that Frank Castle has been framed for attacking a building on Wall Street and killing cops and killing everybody. So, of course, who hates him the most are Noble Goodoer, Spider-Man, and he basically thinks Frank Castle has crossed the line, and he confronts Frank Castle, and in a way, like a normal, because the tendency with comic writers is like they have the Punisher beat Spider-Man because he's badass and has a gun, but realistically, Spider-Man would fucking pwn the Punisher because he's faster, he's stronger, he can see what's coming, and so he basically beats it. Like he beats the snot out of him because he's like, you're a murderer, you're this, you're that, you know, basically being all high and mighty and shit. Frank gets a couple licks in, but like, you know, Spider-Man's basically like daring him. It finally takes Frank Castle, like a trick explosive to knock him out. You know, the only way Frank can stop any of these guys is by trickery, and he's still Spider-Man's glove web shooter. So basically, Spider-Man then goes to the Avengers, and he says, "I want to discuss something." The Punisher, like Spider-Man says to Iron Man or Tony Stark, Thor, Captain America, Wolverine, and Black Widow, like, "It's time we brought him in." And basically, they have the most logical reasoning. Like the Avengers, like Tony Stark, "So I'm gonna go back to that Bruce Springsteen concert." Like Thor says, "I have business to attend elsewhere." And Spider-Man's like, "You guys aren't listening. He's a maniac. We have to get him." And like, you know, and like, they basically, they're acting like he's beneath their level. You know, he doesn't, you know.
What a peasant.
Yeah, I mean, like he killed, like, you know, like even Tony Stark.
It's like a throwback to Civil War almost, where they're like, "Get that bastard, like, crazy guy."
Like even Tony's like, "This is Bushy stuff. Is the Punisher a very bad man? Sure. Does it make him our problem? Absolutely." And then, of course, Steve agrees with Spider-Man. It's like, if we, you know, basically by letting him go do whatever he wants, we're condoning his actions. So, and eventually Wolverine has a confrontation with Cap, and he's like, he thinks he has a problem with this, and Wolverine tells him, "Just between you and me, maybe, you believe the best, Captain. Me, I believe some people deserve to die." Is he referring to Frank? We don't know. So Logan eventually meets up with Wolverine and basically warns him, you know, "Hey, because of what you did, the Avengers are coming." And he tells him as a warning, they're not going to kill you. They're gonna lock you up. They're going to put you somewhere, and it'll kill you. This begins the first fight, technically, with Spider-Man versus Punisher. So really, this issue was kind of weird. Like, the artist, Giamentino, or I don't know how to pronounce his name. If you go look through it and look at what Tony Stark's wearing, it's like a white suit, bright, like out of the 1980s. Like, it was really weird art choice. I had wished Chichetto was able to draw this, because this kind of hurt the book a little bit. But so basically, this whole crux of the story is Punisher versus the Avengers, but in the Marvel Universe and where it matters, quote unquote. You know, and sort of how the Avengers are nonchalant about it, and next the Black Widow is going to go track him. The next issue is Punisher versus Black Widow. The only way Greg Rucka can write it. I like the fact that the Avengers, you know, some of the Avengers are like, "Hey, he's not our problem." But of course, if it's Captain America, to be like, "No, he is our problem. We have to just think about this." So if you were interested... go ahead.
No, I was just... is this the miniseries that was teased a while back, or is this leading up to that?
This is the miniseries.
This is the miniseries. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm completely ignorant of his going on.
Yeah,
so
and the thing is, if you had never read his run on Punisher, you can just totally pick this up and read it. Thor's in his new costume here. The next cover shows them all the Marvel Now costumes. So I'm really... the thing why I'm reading this is because I like Frank Castle as a character, and I really want to see how Rucka handles Frank fighting the Avengers in the Marvel Universe, where it's not like some kind of gimmick like the Punisher kills the Marvel Universe or Marvel Zombies or something like that. So I really want to see, I know he's not going to die because he's going to, you know, because of the Thunderbolts book, but I really
want to Frank Castle's never going to die. He's just going to be like the last guy standing at the end of everything. He'll just be there like...
him and the Hulk.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, I give it a 3 out of 5. It was okay. It wasn't great. But it's more of curiosity for the next couple of issues. Like, okay, where are you going to take with this? That's what I want to see. So we're going to start. You wanted to talk about Wolverine Max?
Well, I want to talk about another book first, if you would be so kind.
Oh, sure. Go. The final issue of Deadpool, right?
That final issue of Daniel Way's Deadpool. It's coming back fairly quickly with Brian Posehn and, the other man behind the title. But, yeah, this is Deadpool number 63, Daniel Way's final issue after having begun the run back when Secret Invasion was still in full swing. So, you know, end of an era almost. Forgive me if I geek out a little bit, but essentially this wraps up the whole storyline behind Deadpool being hunted down by this vengeful government agent that she believes he wronged her and, you know, he crippled her for life and stuff. And so the issue features T-Ray and Slayback, two Deadpool foes that you'd only know if you were really, really a Deadpool fanatic. They were employed by this woman to kill Deadpool for her. And it actually is kind of a quick deal for Deadpool almost. He pretty much kills Slayback almost instantly. What happens is they're in this, confiscated hovercraft or hover ship or whatever, almost like a helicarrier. And he starts taking control of the ship, and Slayback, a guy from Department H, gets scared, and he leaves to go, you know, parachute out of the ship and escape. Turns out Deadpool swapped out the parachute for an explosive device, and he kills himself. So that leads to Deadpool infiltrating the ship through the hatch that Slayback was going to jump out of. And next we get Deadpool facing off against T-Ray, who, for the most part, owns Deadpool and stuff. But then Deadpool threatens him with an explosive device, but T-Ray confiscates it. And, you know, I guess what ends up happening is he threatens to blow it up, but then it gets taken from him. And as he goes to press it to blow Deadpool up, it turns out that the detonator was the explosive device, and he kills himself. And the woman who was crippled saw this all coming, and she's kind of like, you know, she's still going to kill him. But, you know, he says that, you know, if you stay, you're going to die. And she's like, that's fine as long as I take you down with me. And she still holds a grudge against him because, you know, he crippled her and stuff. But then Deadpool busts out in probably one of the most logical and dumbest speeches I think I've ever heard that actually talks her down from doing anything. He pretty much points out that she was undercover and she made her own bed after going into a den of bad guys, and she was among people who did deserve to get blown up and shot and killed and stuff, and so it wasn't his fault because he didn't know, and this is all really just about her revenge thing because she can't walk and stuff. And finally he just tells her to get her head out of her ass, and that's all it takes for her to stop all of this. And he actually goes, I cannot believe that worked. And then what we get in the final closing issue is really what sets up Deadpool, I think, for the Marvel now and the future beyond. What we get is, turns out, evil Deadpool, the Deadpool clone comprised of all of Deadpool's severed and dismembered body parts over the years, tracks him down and finds him. Now, this Deadpool was supposedly hit with the same serum that Deadpool got hit with that removes his healing factor and was killed. But this is the same exact evil Deadpool. And as it turns out, the serum that Deadpool was shot with, it isn't permanent. It wore off, and he came back with his healing factor and his cancer. And so he's standing over Deadpool right now, basically a harbinger of saying, hey, you're going to be the same exact schmuck you were, you know, 50 issues ago. And it sets up Deadpool, I think, for just returning to that status quo in the Marvel Now future. And the issue ends with pretty much evil Deadpool standing over regular Deadpool, and he pretty much says, some things there's just no cure for. It didn't work. Not permanently, at least. Is that disappointment or hope or what? What's going on in that head of yours? I say we take a look, and he blows Deadpool's brains out, thus ending issue number 63, and with it, Daniel's Way run on Deadpool story arc. It's issue. And it actually, he has a little bit of a an ending letter to the readers and stuff, basically saying back when he took over Deadpool, he could do whatever the fuck he wanted, so he just ran with it. And I must say that it's created probably one of the greatest Deadpool, I think, runs that will go down. Comparable up there to Joe Kelly, I think. Not surpassing it, but comparable. And, you know, he's really excited. He says to see Brian Posehn and Duggan, Gary Duggan or Jerry Duggan and Tony Moore take over the book. And so he'll be reading that. And he'll still get to play with Deadpool and Thunderbolts and stuff. But it was really kind of just, you know, a bittersweet issue because it kind of returns Deadpool back to what he was before he got hit with the serum and stuff. And so he's kind of reverting to his old self. But we'll see how much of his characterization from this issue carries over into the new series. The only complaint I really have is the artist, Philippe Andretti, something like that. His art was kind of scratchy and loose and almost cartoonish, and it didn't really work for this issue, I don't think. I mean, I would have much preferred to have one of the more constant artists who's worked on Deadpool come back for this, but, you know, can't always get what you want. But overall, it was still a great, great read. Daniel Way's writing, of course, of Deadpool is just great, and I will miss him immensely when he's gone. So, Daniel Way, thank you for all your hard work and time put into Deadpool. You've really just, you've won me over as a fan for life with this, honestly. And I'll miss you when you're gone, buddy. Deadpool will live on in Brian Posehn and Jerry Duggan's Deadpool.
Well, from one goodbye to another, so
day of goodbyes, it would seem.
Yeah. Also wrapping up is the Matt Fraction has now wrapped up. Him and Salvador Rooker have wrapped up their 60 issue run on Iron Man. Yes, I did the math. It's 60 issues from issue 1 to 527, which makes no sense. I'm saying that out loud because of the renumbering. But yeah, 60 consecutive issues of Iron Man of the same creative team. A lot of people bitching about, oh, nobody says in comics forever. Iron Man's been doing that for the past 5 years now. So basically, this is the epilogue in it. And Tony Stark is coming back from being kept captive in Mandarin City. And he's trying to revert to everything. You know, everything's as normal, but something's unsettling about it. Like, he's just, everything doesn't feel right. Like, he's just going through the motions of everything. You know, and Maria, apparently we get the answers to the fact that the reason Mandarin was able to get a hold of Tony Stark is because during World's Most Wanted, the tech that Maria Hill was supposed to get in where she was controlled by the controller of all people was where the Mandarin got his hold. Like, that was always that was compromised by the Mandarin either before she got there. So that's how that happened. So that's how Mandarin was able to get into Tony Stark. And he basically starts isolating himself from everybody, sort of, you know, working more, trying to figure things out, you know, not really sure what to do next. Like, he's done everything. So, and there's even a great splash page of him destroyed, like, a big robot, and, like, him sitting on the, like, it's in San Francisco, sitting on the robot, he just sighs, and the little caption, I think I'm depressed. And he starts spawning, like, what's next? What do I do next, you know? And, also, Ezekiel Stain and his girlfriend, what's her name? The Hammer Girl. I can't remember her name right
Justine
now.
Hammer, I believe
yeah,
it was?
Yeah, Justine Hammer. Both kill the mom.
Or is it Sasha or something like that?
Yeah, they kill Sasha Hammer and I think it's Justine.
Ezekiel.
No, just Sasha's the mom. Justine is the daughter.
Oh, okay.
Justine
okay.
Hammer and Ezekiel Stain kill Sasha Hammer. So that's done. They're running around. They kill, you know, she killed them. They Sasha, Justine, and Ezekiel killed her. So that was a nice little thing to go. So basically, Tony Stark calls a meeting for Stark for Resilient, and he basically says, you know, he's going on a little vacation, and you know, the same old problems, nothing's changed. He needs to get his head together a little bit, and you know, most people who do that, they go like on a self journey to find themselves. They go like they climb Mount Kilimanjaro, but you know, he says this like Earth is for other people, Rhodey. And, you know, he's like, he's going to go hunt the future. He just doesn't want to sit her around here and do nothing. He wants to go find it. And that's who he is. And he holds Pepper Potts' hands and he says, I'll miss you most of all, Scarecrow. I thought that was fake. Because it's Resident of Oz. I thought that was funny. And like, he apologized. Like, I'm sorry I have to do this. He'll do better next time. And it's the last page of a single caption, upper left-hand corner, is like, let me tell you about my dreams, the future, finale, the stars, my destination. Tony Stark's heading into space. Going to... So... This was not what I expected when it comes to wrapping up his run. I mean, pretty much every answer we got, every answer, you know, we got every answer beforehand. So this is just sort of, you know, after everything that has happened to him over the course of this title, you know, him being brain dead, him losing his company, him restarting his company, him being captured by the Mandarin, you know, him regaining his, all these things. And he's like, well, now what do I do? And it's just sort of like, now I'm going to do this next. And I really enjoyed it. I didn't give it a 5 stars like I wanted to. I give it a 4 out of 5. But really, like, and the thing is, I have to say this right now. This is my last Iron Man issue for a while. Not only have I read this Iron Man iteration for 60 issues, but I also read the last Iron Man issue series, which is 33 issues. So that's 93 issues of Iron Man in a row that I have read monthly. And... part of me is like, I need a break from Tony Stark's adventures. But apparently he's going to be showing up in Guardians of the Galaxy. So, you know, that's where apparently he's going to be. Although I'm interested to see...
Going cosmic!
I wonder how it's going to work out in the Iron Man book that, you know, that Gillen's writing. And
oh, yeah, yeah, that'll be interesting to see.
So, I mean, it like, I love this run. Like, I own all of it. Like, this is one of the few comics that I've owned from single issues that I hold from start to finish, that I didn't stop, that I kept reading, and that I feel like I'm better for.
Same as Daniel Way's Deadpool myself. I never skipped an issue on Deadpool. Read it all the way through.
It's going to be weird to not read an Iron Man issue.
I know. I feel the same way. Well, no, because I'm picking
Deadpool.
It up. But
you're going to read Deadpool.
Yeah, that's true.
Whereas
yeah.
me, it's like, for at least a while... I'm saying goodbye to Iron Man after 93 issues. Like, you think 60's a lot? I read 90, man.
Well, that's not counting, like, one-shots and miniseries and stuff.
Well, technically, it's like 90, like 96, because including two annuals and stuff like that. So
yeah, that's true. That's true.
So, like I'm good. You know, it's been a great run. Like, a lot of people complain, oh, nothing much happened. And sure, I don't necessarily believe those claims are true. I think every single thing happened, you just gotta look for them, and it made, you know, it was the long game format which Matt Fraction played, and I think he played it well, and everything paid off. You know, World's Most Wanted is easily the best arc he's done.
That was a great story. Like, I was reading Iron Man regularly back then. That was very well done.
You know, everybody points to that, so yeah, I mean, I am so from issues 1 to 33 when they renumbered at 500 to 527, It's been a fucking fun ride. Thank you, Matt. Like you said, thank you to Daniel Way. Thank you, Matt.
Absolutely.
Faction, and thank you to Salvador LaRocca for giving me the Iron Man tale of our generation. It's been fucking phenomenal 60 issues. I didn't think I would be around to see this day. It makes me sad that Iron Man's going away for me, at least. All right. Well, let's wrap it up with you with Wolverine Max.
Was it Numero Uno.
Was it good?
It was interesting. As you know, as it dictates, we have to go back to Japan at least every once in a while when it comes to Wolverine. So we go to Japan in this issue, and it actually opens with Wolverine being the last survivor of a plane crash that killed everyone else on board except for him. And he wakes up after being transported with Medevac, and he has no idea who he is or why he's there, but he knows that he speaks Japanese. And he knows that he needed to kill, like, he was fighting in the water against sharks and shit. So it was really, really interesting to see, you know, because Wolverine, he's always had memory problems. But now he has no idea who he is or why he's there or stuff. And it sort of ends with him being the culprit fingered for the explosion, though he doesn't know why. And moreover, when they show snapshots of him in the airport when they're putting out, like, an APB on him on the news and stuff, A girl that he found in the water that he was trying to save is the same one he was traveling with. And he doesn't know who she is or why she was there. And what's really interesting, and what we get interspliced between all this, is sort of a second issue. It sort of shows Wolverine's, like, past, you know. It shows him killing people and fighting and living places and other stuff. But then we get a really interesting bit where, after one of Wolverine's outbursts in a location where he was, you know, trying to be removed from, and he fought back and he killed the townspeople, and then he fled to a temple, we meet a character who finds him and says that they are soulmates with him. This guy is dressed up like a friggin' cowboy prospector almost. And he realizes that this man, who's, you know, a bald-shaven monk sitting in a temple and stuff, he is exactly like himself, and they are soulmates. And this man is very, very calm, very cerebral in how he approaches him. He doesn't attack, doesn't show any aggression. He just sort of reaches out to him as almost a brother and a supportive person. And he pretty much says that they are meant to be together. And it sounds a little creepy. And then finally, when Wolverine tries to shake him off and stuff, this guy throws him against a tree and floors him. And this is where we learn that the man who's come to meet Wolverine is named Victor. And it is a completely different take on Victor Creed. Because this guy, there's no, like, claws, no fangs being bared or anything. He honestly looks like a friggin' prospector or something. He looks nothing like Victor Creed. And to see a different version actually makes me want to read the second issue, because I want to know what the hell is up with this Victor. This Victor alone compels me to find out why the hell he's acting like this. You know, it's really, really interesting. And the story itself and the main storyline with the plane crash is interesting too, because I kind of want to know how or if these two stories tie together, in what way and stuff. And so, at the very least, it's compelled me to pick up the next issue. I didn't dig the art on, like, the flashbacks and stuff. They were really, really, like, it looked like almost Sweet Tooth, but a little bit less, you know, refined and stuff. But other than that, the art and writing of the main storyline and the secondary storyline are both very, very good. So I would actually recommend this issue if you dig Wolverine and want to see a little more of his backstory, I suppose. Though I will say, for a Max issue, it didn't feature anything I don't think he could have featured in a regular Wolverine issue. I mean, it had him saying fuck a few times, but outside of that, it was really no different than any other Wolverine issue. So, but yeah, overall, it was a really good issue. I give it a 4 out of 5. It was actually pretty damn good for what it was. So I'll give it another issue before I set a definitive decision, like, okay, I'll buy this story arc or whatever, and we'll see where it goes from there or not.
All right, well, let's wrap up this show with, since Halloween is this Wednesday, what's our favorite Halloween costume? Our favorite Marvel costumes, and what costume would we like to wear on Halloween? Now, that's always a difference, cause just because you like that costume doesn't mean you want to wear it. Like, for instance, I love Galactus' costume. I'm not going to get caught dead wearing that shit.
You like the big purple and blue and the helmet and all that shit?
Oh, yeah. I think it's a great design. I think it's a great look.
Oh, my
look.
Gosh.
I love that. I'm also, of course, you can't be... I'm also a fan of, like, Daredevil slick design. I'm not a fan of when somebody does, like, the movie, but, you know, like, all with edges. But it reminds me of, like, how the Flash's looks, you know, being slick and you know, like an acrobat's costume.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Punisher's the easiest costume to be. The Punisher's just
skull t-shirt,
jeans, and
maybe a trench coat thrown in there every once in a while, and boom, you're set.
Jacket works as well.
The white go-go boots. You got to have the go-go boots. I kid.
Yeah, I mean, I think Thor's redesign by Olivier Coipel is fucking phenomenal.
That was a really well done comic redesign. I will give him that. That was a very, very interesting and well done retooled comic costume redesign, I should say.
You know? What about you, Brian? What are some of your favorites?
Deadpool, first of all. I love him because more than anything else, his mask is sort of just like iconic of who he is, because he doesn't feel like himself outside of the mask. So it really is kind of like his face. But I really do just enjoy the simplicity of his mask. And I will recall when I first saw him in costume, I thought he was like an evil version of Spider-Man or like a Venom type thing, because he really looks, for a second, if you don't know comics and you look at him, it's kind of like, the mask kind of looks similar. It's kind of weird. So it really kind of threw me when I first saw that. But yeah, Deadpool's costume, without a doubt. I will say I enjoyed Simon Williams' later costume, where it's like the robe and like the pants and slippers and shit, and it looks like Hugh Hefner fighting crime and stuff, and I liked that one. And also the SHIELD clone uniform, typically deployed to SHIELD personnel, but also used by the Secret Warriors in Hickman's run. I liked those costumes. Those were simple, efficient, and, you know, they wore them when kicking ass and stuff. So those are just some of them. But I guess if you want to go for flashy or something like that, Thor's, like we said, is always a classic costume to fall back on. I do enjoy Hawkeye's, his classic one with the purple and the blue and just the whole appeal of it. What else? Yeah, I think that's about it. You know, just a lot of cool, different, you know, sometimes zany costumes. But I will say, a number of the ones coming out nowadays with Marvel Now, I do not approve of. Specifically, the Hulk armor and Ant-Man with his ribbons and She-Thing or Thing-Girl or whoever she is. I don't like them. Those costumes suck, and they suck. Well, maybe not the characters themselves, but She-Thing definitely sucks. So, yeah, that. Done.
All right. What about... Okay, yeah. Now let's move on to costumes that we like to wear. And I think to wear, I'd like to always like to be the Incredible Hulk. it's not even technically a costume. It's more of like, you know... It's just purple pants or whatever kind of pants and then green skin.
Cartman like, smash!
You know, I think that's always fun. I've always wanted to wear Moon Knight's costume. I don't know
Moon
why.
Knight is another great costume. Although, I like it.
Although in real life, that shit would get really dirty after a couple treks down any kind of downtown metro area. So
well, one thing I liked was that back in the very short-lived Vengeance of the Moon Knight, the very first issue, he says, "They say I wear white so that so the enemies can see me coming." And I really enjoy that because it shows how ballsy he is. And it's really a flashy costume when you think about it. It's pale white in a city of just dark and grime and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd get dirty pretty damn quick.
I would like Namor's Speedo.
Oh my god, no, Ben. No. Some things are just a little too simplistic. At least go for his, like, later X-Men
whatever.
Uniform. Just, no, Ben. No, I mean, I know Arnold would probably like you in that, but no.
I don't even
know
Arnold would like me in that anyways. I'm trying to think. Magneto's costume I would really love to wear, especially the helmet and the cape.
Oh, yeah. Badass. That's cool. I guess for myself, I've always enjoyed the simplicity of a very well-done Wolverine costume because it doesn't necessitate the yellow spandex and stuff. You could just go in with, like, jeans and a ripped T-shirt and shit and be like, "Hey, I'm Wolverine." People are like, "Oh, yeah, hey." So, fairly simplistic. Beyond that, I guess a practical Captain America costume, like the one we saw almost did back in World War II when he hightails it, I guess a costume like that would be kind of cool because it's functional and practical and stuff. What else? Anything really is along the lines of one of the redesigned Asgardian costumes I think would be cool. Because they're very, very, even just like outside of the books or stuff, like especially in like the movie where they show all like different Asgardian like clothing and stuff, they were really cool designs and some really cool features in there that I liked. And I thought, yeah, if I could get my hands on one of those, I could make a pretty good Asgardian. You know, I'm Aryan enough to be an Asgardian. Hey, they let Asians in. They can't let me in. But yeah, you know, just all kinds of cool stuff, I guess. Hats off to the Asgardians, though, because they know how to travel in style. Mm-hmm. Although, I would like to say, I would like to go out wearing one of those giant Loki helmets with the huge horns.
Yeah,
I want to wear one of those at some point. Just be like the most completely obnoxious dude at the party. Just like, hey, button my head in. Hey.
I would love, and this is the fanboy in me, to like go to like a hipster place and just wear the Doctor Strange costume and just meditate. It's like, just meditate. Like, no, I'm meditating.
I could go with you. I could be dressed as Wong and just be like, Master.
I just love the big flowing cape and the Eye of Agamotto. It's just a great costume.
Yeah, yeah. He has a very ornate, overly done, you know, costume thing going on.
You know what would be a great costume to wear? Dr. Doom's.
That would be a badass.
It's simplistic yet badass.
It's basically just a suit of armor and a green cape and shit, and you're just like, bam! And it's like, oh my god.
Yep.
Also,
go for it.
What was it? There was one other costume I wanted to say. Oh my god, what were we just talking about like 5 seconds ago? You said Doctor Strange?
Yeah.
Shit, what the hell was it? God, I just had it and now I can't remember what it is. Damn it. Hate my brain. My brain sucks.
Yes, it does.
Ah, God. Oh, think of it.
Would you wear Juggernaut's costume? Like, I'm talking, yes. I'm not talking X3 Juggernaut. I'm talking actual comic like book Juggernaut.
Dome head going on, yes. And just, yeah, I would wear that. I would go up, be like, I'm the Juggernaut, bitch, and run at people. That would be me. I'd be that guy. You'd be like shaking him like, who's that guy? I'm that guy. Oh, God, that's good. And then probably the easiest costume ever, you dress in like a half-decent suit, you sit yourself down in a wheelchair, you're Professor X all of a sudden, like, holy shit. You need a bald cap, too, but hey, it could work.
It doesn't hurt to find. It'd be fun to dress up as his Mr. Fix-It Hulk, where he's a Las Vegas bookie. Not bookie,
but... Yeah, yeah, like walking around like green face, just
no,
like...
No, he's gray, but...
Oh, yeah, know, gray face, suit. And you're just... Absolutely. That would be a sick costume. Yeah, you'd have to perfect your, what do you call it?
Iron Fist would be a fun costume to wear.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be a decent costume. You know, you got the half mask going, just like... That'd be cool. Although, what are we talking like the old, like, split collar, huge, you know...
That one.
I thought we were talking, like, the Matt Fraction version.
I want the big 70s collar.
You want the big 70s and the kung fu slippers, too?
Yes.
You want to walk around wearing that shit? Oh, my God. I would pay to see you wear that costume. Oh, my gosh. What else? Nick Fury's pretty simple.
Ultimately,
you get some...
Just a black trench coat and black suit.
Yeah, and an eye patch. You can't forget the eye patch. Eye patch is absolutely necessary.
I would love to wear one of the Fantastic Four costumes.
Yeah, I'd probably walk around wearing the Ben Grimm thing. Probably just like the pants. And I'd get like the stony chest thing going. I'd probably do something like that. You know. I'm not a big fan of putting a lot of effort. Like, if Arnold was here, I'm sure he'd be going off the chain with just his ideas and what he loves and stuff. Shout out to Arnold for his cosplaying goods. But, you know, I'm not a big fan of putting a lot of effort into this crap. I really dress up as it is, so.
Last but not least, I would love to dress up as Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel. Yeah. That's a half-decent costume, I guess. I would like to dress up as Star-Lord. I dig the helmet, the whole thing going on with his guns. I would like to dress up as Star-Lord. He's got, like, the old soldier uniform thing going. Then he's got the fancy Star-Lord helmet and shit. And I would really like to dress up as him. That'd be an interesting costume to see put out there.
Yes. All right. Well, let's go ahead.
Or Volstagg. I am told I would make a good Volstagg. So.
A lot of people. Well, we'll see. Maybe one.
If only I could grow a beard, then it would be complete.
But. Yes. Well, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. We hope everybody in New York City is safe. And
everybody everywhere being affected by this storm, we hope you are okay and have your internet connection so you can listen to our podcast, our fabulous podcast.
It's always going to be here. So hopefully you're all safe. Hopefully you're still listening to us. And
Shout out to our bros, Arnold and Taser, up in NYC, hunkering down, hoping to make it through the night. You know, apparently Sandy hates New York just as much as Boston does, so shout out to her as well. And hopefully they'll be back next week with our next show. So
yes, and until then, we will see y'all next week for episode number 123. Thank you, y'all.
Oh, wait. Hold on. Before you sign off, don't forget the RPG show being recorded this Wednesday.
Ladies and gentlemen, this week will be the latest release of the RPG show, where we will talk about Lego Batman 2, Infamous 2, Dead Space, and of course...
Better believe it!
Assassin's Creed 3.
You better believe it!
We'll see y'all. RPG Show will see y'all this Friday for sure. Warrior Street will see y'all next week. Have a safe weekend, everybody. Stay safe, New York.
Peace!